This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. They invite you to celebrate Dominion Day, July 1st, Canada Day. Celebrate 152 years of Canada with three hobo wines. Bring your friends, bring your family, and maybe even reach out and see what your foes are up to. Together, we can make a difference. Details at thehatchwines.com.
Tasting Room Radio, south of Vancouver. We're in Seattle, but we're at the end of the Boeing Field runway. And so you'll hear the occasional flight, well, occasional, like every 3 minutes, another plane will go over. And we're at Jet City. It's a gathering of some 30 rosés, as put together by Charles Smith, Sir Charles Smith. There has to be a chef in-house. And today is his friend, Chef Stuart Lane, the executive chef at Spinazzi and Artusi. And other things. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. What do you know about the event? I mean, you've been doing this for some 5 years with Charles. You know he's goofy, and he has plans that are sometimes like climbing mountains. What was the plan here?
Well, this is the first year that we've been invited to do the lunch for the rosé experience, so we're pretty excited. I think that through the Jet City Meatball competition that we were a part of, that we were lucky enough to be a part of, I think that he kind of saw the type of food that we do, and he likes that style, and so we were lucky enough to come today.
Okay, so tell them about the meatball competition, which happens, I think, in March.
Yeah, so it's basically they take the top restaurants in Seattle that do meatballs, and they said, give us your best, and we did it for, like, I think about 350 people, and judges from New York and all these different, like, media people and stuff, and, yeah, we were lucky enough to come out on top.
What are they looking for? Texture?
I think they did it for basically all of it. It's like texture, taste, you know, appearance, all that. And yeah, we were good. Our meatball's pretty good.
Now, for this menu that you've got in front of us, did you work from the wines out?
Actually, we kind of went from like the season out. That's usually how we operate. And then it made things that made sense with the rosé, specifically the dessert, the first course, very nice, light, seasonal spring dishes like the asparagus with scallops that you're going to have. And strawberries just came on like literally this week. And so we're able to do a dessert with strawberries. Very homey, very simple thing.
Okay, so in the middle, those next three steps.
So then in the middle, we have a cavatelli with a morel mushroom ragu. Very like meaty, and then we have a milk braised pork shoulder with some baked semolina gnocchi.
Very nice.
Yeah, I think that the rosé it'll cut the richness of the pork shoulder, because it's a very rich, like wonderful, like saucy kind of dish. So I think it'll be nice.
And you know, chef, as part of your,
although I think there's Barbaresco with that.
There is a Barbaresco.
So that'll
absolutely.
That'll be pretty nice. It's a little
absolutely.
Bit different, but.
As you know, as part of your research, you would have to taste those wines.
Oh, yes. I mean, they're wonderful. And, like, you know, he does Barbaresco, Moscato in his version, which our restaurant is a Piemontese restaurant. And so we have all those from Piemonte. So it's nice to see, like, the differences and just how great Charles Smith does at, you know, the winery does at those Italian varietals.
Are you pouring his wines at your restaurants?
What's that?
Are you pouring his wines?
We are not currently.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Keep that on the DL. I'm so sorry. No, because we're super authentic, like, Piemontese. We even go outside Piemonte.
He married an Italian.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, more power to him, for sure. But, oh, I think that we're about to.
Okay, man.
We have to go.
Congratulations.
So sorry.
Food, wine, friends. It doesn't get any better than that. You're listening to Tasting Room Radio, a celebration of all three. With your host, Terry David Mulligan.
Just a little bit about the wines that we're going to have today. So the important thing to know about the wines that we produce, everything that we farm is sustainable to biodynamic. There is no chemicals in any vineyards that we work with. We contract vineyards by the acre that we don't own, and they're farmed to our specification. We have our own viticulturists, brands of viticulturists. I am not a legal viticulturist, but I'm a guy that walks through vineyards and we taste the fruit and decide what we're going to pick. We don't do it by numbers. So the same thing in the winery. There is no chemicals in the winery. It's all native ferments, natural ferments, natural secondary fermentation. So we like to say there's nothing in our wine that's anybody else's wine, because there's nothing in our wine except the grapes and the vessel they were resting in. So the wines have a great deal of purity, which I think is important. Number one, they should be infinitely pleasant to drink. They should be balanced. They should speak to the varietal that they are. But when it really comes down to it, how enjoyable are they? And the idea is, I love wine, and I wanted wine that I knew that I thought that people would enjoy to drink. I mean, yes, I mean, it's commerce. You know, we sell wine. But the thing is, if you're going to approach it, how are you going to approach it? And the idea is at the best way possible. I mean, you know, I get to make my living. We get to make our living from making wine. And the thing is, I think it's a tremendous responsibility to produce something that people are going to actually ingest. And the fact is, you know, how would I want it to be if I was just making, like, we're friends and I'm making wine and going to be making wine for every year for our family. It's going to be like this. And I don't care if it's one barrel or, you know, something as large as Wine Substance Now, which is over 200,000 cases. No chemicals in the vineyard, all natural ferments, all wines put in barrel. I mean, it's incredible work that we're doing, the amount of work it takes to do it. But the thing is, we're dedicated to it because, like I said, we're very fortunate to do this. So I also feel very fortunate that I'm able to host a lunch. You know, when I started the winery, I had $5,000 borrowed and an 87 Chevy Astro van. So to be sitting here in a building with my name on it is preposterous. But, you know, but you get used to it. It's just the way it is. But the thing is, my dream was to make wine. And I came to it by way of hospitality industry. I was a migrant restaurant worker. I worked winters in Palm Springs and summers in Napa Valley or Lake Tahoe going back to 1981. So that's literally where, you know, I worked the seasons. And I realized that working in the kitchen, you know, it's hot, dirty, you get low pay, and somebody yells at you for about 12 hours. I'm like, I don't want that job. And I walked out the front of the restaurant, and I was like, oh, it's nice and clean, there's music, people are eating, they're happy. It's like, I like this. And you get to leave every day with tips and money in your pocket. I'm like, I want this job. And after a couple months, there was a guy that would show up late and leave early, and he had won some award or whatever. He had this chain with a medal around his chest. And I wanted to be like, who's that? He's like, that's the wine guy. I said, what does he do? He comes late, leaves early. We tip him out and he drinks wine. We're like, I want that job. So that's what I did up until I moved to Denmark in 1990, where I managed rock and roll bands for 10 years with no great economic success. It was definitely informed my approach and my kind of fearlessness when it came to doing new projects and packaging and really no compromise. You know, you want to be in a band, you buy a guitar and you start banging away at it until you learn how to play, and you convince some other people to do the same with you. And doing the wine thing was the same as well, was I decided I could just do it if I wanted to just do it. And with my wine background, my knowledge of wine, my friends that are winemakers, I decided to do it. The first day I ever worked as a winemaker was the day I made my first wine. I never worked another day at another winery, even volunteering one day. I never went to a wine school. Because, well, they didn't want to have me because I didn't have the grades to get into wine school. So I wanted to go to UC Davis, but I think it was important that I had graduate high school first. So I actually never bothered to graduate from high school. I was very bored with school, and I would just sit there and soak up everything that was there and leave. I wasn't really concerned about taking tests or anything else. I figured, well, I'll find my way in the world, and lo and behold, I found my way in the world, and here we are today. But so this is a labor of love. Later with passion, and hopefully you'll find integrity and uncompromising. So this is basically it. So it's a real pleasure to have everyone here. I know it sounds like prepared remarks, but it's not. In fact, I'm still hungover last night. A little bit. But I did work out this morning, which was pretty incredible. I'm surprised I didn't have a brain hemorrhage. But I'm good, and now I've got the magic thing to bring me back to life. So anyways, welcome so much. I hope you enjoy this delicious lunch. We're having the Vino Rosé, which is 100% Sangiovese, grown in primary soils that are sand and gravel. So you'll end up with a really pale but very aromatic wine. We're also pouring the 15 Jacks. Yeah, single vineyard Barbera grown down in the rocks in Walla Walla. It's the oldest planting of vineyards in the rocks area in Walla Walla. Dried riverbeds, and so it was planted in 1996. And this is our single vineyard Barbera, where we make less than 300 cases of. And then we also, because, Spinazzi is a great Northern Piedmonte style restaurant, well, we gotta drink Barolo or Barbaresco, yeah. So I decided from my cellar to bring some 1978 Barbaresco. There you go. So we can have a delicious aged Nebbiolo with our lunch, and then we'll finish with our single vineyard Moscato from vines that are over 40 years old. And this is our lunch. Absolutely. So anyways, welcome everybody. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Cheers.
We're spending the first half of this show at Jet City in Seattle as the guest of Charles Smith from Wines of Substance and Kay Vintners. When we come back, a standing, running around the room conversation with Charles Smith and a special session with Ann Sperling and Colonna. Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch Wines. Three very special wines you want to keep an eye on. Their great new Cab Franc, the Black Swift Vineyards 2016 Oak Street Chardonnay, winner of a gold medal at the All-Canadian Wine Championships, and gobsmacked the 2018 Cyclops Love. All the details at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Bench 1775. Make your plans for August 1st and 2nd as the first annual 97 South Song Sessions take place. The shows will take place at Bench 1775 Winery and Penticton Lakeside Resort and Conference Center. August 1st and 2nd, some of the very best singer-songwriters will gather at Bench 1775. Details at bench1775.com. Welcome back to Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We're in Seattle at Jet City. If you're going to Seattle or you're heading for Portland or Los Angeles or whatever, there's an amazing building right at the foot, literally at the end of the runway at Boeing Field. And it's called Jet City. And it's Charles Smith's home winery now. Even though he's the Prince of Walla Walla, that's where he's making his stand. Wines of Substance and K. Vintners are there. All of the great wines that he makes. By the way, he made, in that building, since they've opened it, 53 different wines. 51 of them are single varietals. That's how cool this place is. Headlining this rosé tasting at Jet City was the Reverend Horton Heat. And the place was jammed. We're going to have a conversation with Charles in a lunch just before they opened the doors. Because once they opened the doors, it was crazy. And then a conversation with Andrew Latta, who is the winemaker and the owner of Latta Wines, L-A-T-T-A. They make fabulous wines. His Roussan is world-class, and his Rosé was the best one in the room. I just didn't want to say it in front of the other 29. And in the second half of Tasting Room Radio, Ann Sperling, star winemaker in Niagara, a really smart, grounded winemaker who challenges herself to make very special wines at her family's vineyard in Kelowna called Sperling Vineyards. We're going to talk about her wines called the Vision Series. They are really different. They are really different. And that's why I want to talk to Ann Sperling about how she came to make these wines. So that's the second half of this show. Enjoy. Here's a conversation with Charles Smith.
Charles, I was watching this all unfold and I thought, all right, it's a gathering of rosé wineries and styles of rosé and winemakers. But are they like-minded with you? Are they growing their wine? Are they creating, are they taking care of sustainability the way that you would?
Well, I think everybody takes their own approach and their own path is their own path. I think that the wineries I invited here all have integrity and make delicious wine, and that's why they're here.
Many of your friends?
Some friends, some new friends, and people I respect and doing good work in the industry. And also, you know, a couple of wineries that, you know, not necessarily my cup of tea. The thing is, but people tend to really enjoy them, and I want them to come too, because not my taste is not everybody's taste.
And you can actually talk about Washington State Rosé as a thing. There's a certain cleanliness to it.
Yeah, we have a cool climate here. It's really situated for rosé. I mean, it's not as cold and rainy as people might expect, of course, east of the Cascades. But long, dry growing seasons and make beautiful, pale, delicious rosé. And, you know, here in the Pacific Northwest, we wait for spring or summer to arrive after a nice, long, rainy winter. And so rosé is it's the first day the rosé shows up. It's a signal that summer is here.
Okay, and if you just look to your right, as you well do, you can see the room is starting to fill or be...
It's packed down
there. It's ridiculous. And you've created an event here, something very special.
Yeah, people seem to really enjoy it. I mean, it's just a lot of people. But, you know, the idea is, you know, we put something on. We spend every dollar that comes in the door on the experience, so people actually enjoy it. And it's really it's our gift and our shared experience to our community here in Seattle.
Charlie, take us through the wines that you poured today.
For lunch today, we poured the 2018 Evergreen Vineyard Pinot Grigio from Vino, Casa Smith. We also then had the 2018 Vino Rosé, 100% Sangiovese. Then from our Walla Walla Vineyard, Jack's Single Vineyard Barbera, 2005, Casa Smith. And then, because it's always fun, Marchese di Grassi, the 1978 Barbaresco. And to not be outdone, the 2017 Moscato from Vino Casa Smith, 50-year-old vines from the Upland Vineyard.
I loved them all, but the Barbera stood out, and I knew it would. I kind of knew it would going in. It's just so special, so different.
Thank you. I think it's delicious as well.
It can stand anywhere in the world, but you don't make a lot.
No, I don't. It's funny, I ran into Ann Colgan, you know, the winemaker from California, about a month ago at a little delicious restaurant. And I actually happened to have a bottle of that wine with me to give somebody else as a gift. And we had never met before. And she's getting up to leave with her husband after we'd been formally introduced. And I walked up to her and I gave her a bottle of this wine. I said, here's my Barbera. And, you know, I'm known for making Syrah and other things, but I said, I make so little of this, you should have this bottle. And she took it with her. I'm very curious, Anne, did you like the wine?
You, of course, you and I have links through music and mutual friends,
right.
But also rock and roll music. You have two artists here today. Tell them about it.
Harmar Superstar, kind of, you know, super soulful, you know, almost kind of indie in a way, almost kind of punk rock in their attitude. They're super great. So I'm really happy that they were able to make it here from Minneapolis. And also the great Reverend Horton Heat, freshly off the airplane from Dallas, Texas. Both bands are in the midst of tours. They took a day off of the tour to come join us here at Jet City. Flames, and, you know, of course, Reverend Horton Heat, premier rockabilly, psychobilly band.
And finally, tell them what you're doing on Monday.
I'm taking some time off. I don't know if it's well-deserved, but I'm heading to Barcelona. I'm riding my motorcycle from Barcelona to Copenhagen, Denmark. You can catch me in the south of France, northwestern Italy, Austria, Munich, Prague, Berlin, and Copenhagen, where I'll finish up on the 19th of June and going to the Hard Rock Metal Festival Copenhagen, where Charles Smith Wines and all things Charles Smith are the exclusive wines of Copenhagen 2019.
And you're riding a what?
My 2007 Road King Classic. Chopped, shaved, lowered, and ready to blast off. So I'm going to ride my motorcycle from tip to tip.
Thank you for your wine. Thank you for Jet City. Thank you for the rosé hang and the music and you.
Thank you. It was great. Great to see you, Terry.
This is Tasting Room Radio.
Andrew Latta, Latta Wines. There is a rosé revolution, Andrew, throughout the world, but the world has decided that the rosé coming from Washington State is quite something special. Tell me what you're pouring today.
We're pouring our Kind Stranger Rosé. It's a blend of Grenache, Mourvèdre, and Cinsault from two vineyards in Wallach Slope, Ravenscliff, and Northridge Vineyard, which are two really special sites I've worked with for about 12 years now. So.
Are each of those wines made separately and then blended together? What's the process?
They are made separately, yeah, because they have a tendency. I mean, Grenache and Cinsault are typically a little bit earlier than the Mourvèdre.
Yeah.
And so we're direct to press. We don't do any contact. We typically pick up a little bit of color from the Mourvèdre mostly. Both the Grenache and Cinsault stay pretty light. We're just trying to make a very fresh, like clean, fruit-driven style. It's dry wine. And, you know, oftentimes you hear that, you know, people see rosé and there's still, like, bad memories of white
still.
Sin.
Still. You know, I don't know why.
Yeah, I know. But, ours is a really dry, crisp, pretty wine.
Rhone style?
Rhone style, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And just, you know, trying to capture all those, like, great aromatics. I mean, I think the wine really jumps out of the glass.
I was looking around over your shoulder. I was going to ask you about the... Because I know that women started this... I believe that the feminine drinker started the rosé revolution, but there's a lot of guys in here. For sure.
Yeah, I think rosé is, it's crossed that gender gap. And, like, I mean, it's not just rosé. I mean, women really drive consumption in the U.S. of all wines, you know, like, so thank God, you know, somebody's got to do it. So
you didn't bring any rosé, did you?
No, just rosé today. None of the Roussanne. Yeah. We're We have it at the winery.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just released in 2016. It's tasting great, you know.
What's the next time that all of your Soto wineries gather and do a pour? Is that in the fall?
We'll have our block party in August. I don't recall the exact date off the top of my head, but yeah, we'll have the doors open and get everybody in for a big party in August. So,
and while you're doing that, while you're looking,
yeah.
What's next up for Lata in terms of releases? Any surprises?
We'll be getting into our fall releases. So we just had our spring release, and we just released the rosé about a week ago, actually. And so we'll be releasing our GSM. The new Roussan and our Syrah. So, which I made a lot of Syrahs over the years and just released the first one under my label last year. And then this will be the second vintage of this wine for me.
Okay.
So, it'll be a Sunday in August. We'll keep everybody posted.
A Sunday in August?
Yes. We don't know which one.
There's a winery in BC called a Sunday in August.
That's, oh, really?
I'll never forget
good,
that.
Good.
Thank you, and thank you for Lata Wines.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you for doing this in the middle of this circus. Because there's a lot of rosé to choose from. What is it that makes Washington rosé wine stand up?
I think for me, I mean, it's analogous to like with Washington is a great place, and I think this is borne out in my single vineyard red wines. It's a great place for Rhone varietals for me. I love working with Grenache and Sanso and Mourvèdre because the soils in Washington really, I mean, they look like Provence. You drive around, you see the sagebrush, and it feels like, you know, the Mediterranean in some places. And so I think that kind of soil analog, those bright sunny days and the cool nights, I mean, we make great rosé, you know, it's like the bright, fruity, and like that diurnal shift that we have that keeps the freshness in the wines, I think it's a separation for other domestic rosés for us. You know?
Okay, this on first appearance looks to be a crazy room.
Yes.
Are you like
very
doing
crazy?
Is this okay with you? You like this level?
You know, as long as the people are happy, I'm happy. So, I mean, it's pretty easy. All we have to do is pour wine, you know? So, my elbow is going to be tired tomorrow, I'm sure. But, like, I think... Yeah, it's great. I mean, everybody looks like they're having a great time. I'm excited for the bands.
Oh, yeah, wait until the band kicks in. It'll be tough talking to people.
Oh, I know. You got to get your interviews in.
You know.
Yeah.
Thank you, Andrew.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Andrew Lata, Lata Wines.
The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Bench 1775. Make your plans for August 1st and 2nd as the first annual 97 South Song Sessions take place. The shows will take place at Bench 1775 Winery and Penticton Lakeside Resort and Conference Center. August 1st and 2nd, some of the very best singer-songwriters will gather at Bench 1775. Details at bench1775.com. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Canada's number one winery, Road 13. It's time to book your dinner with Backyard Farms on Road 13. Amazing artisan wines with four-course meals prepared by Chef Chris Van Hooydonk of Backyard Farms. July 27, August 17, September 28, and October the 5th. All the details at road13vineyards.com. Welcome back to Tasty Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. Ann Sperling is a wine star at Southbrook Vineyards in Niagara and at her home vineyard, her family's vineyard in Kelowna called Sperling. She doesn't have to prove anything to anybody. She is a winemaker. However, she's challenged herself. If you'd like to follow along, go to sperlingvineyards.com and look up wines, then look up the Vision Series. We're going to be talking about the Organic Natural Amber Pinot Gris 2017, the Vision Chardonnay, the Spritz Pet Nat. That's the wine that I'm going to get hung up on because it's so good. There's a Pinot Noir Reserve and a Brut Rosé 2013. But we're going to focus on the Organic Natural Amber, the Vision Chardonnay, and the Spritz Pet Nat. Here's a very geeky conversation with myself and Ann Sperling. Tasting Room Radio, Terry David Mulligan. There are certain people I probably could talk to each and every week. One of them would be Ann Sperling. But that would qualify as stalking. So I can't do that. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Terry.
I thought that somewhere in my brain, I was thinking that you were in the Okanagan at Sperling Vineyards, but you're not. You're back east.
Yeah, at this moment I'm in Niagara, and but I'm doing a couple of days of bottling here, and then I'm actually heading to the UK to tour some sparkling wineries, and then to hopefully relax and enjoy some great food and wine in Tuscany for a few days.
Did you go to London for the yearly
No, not this year either.
Can I go with you?
Yeah.
When you do go?
This year sounds like it was the year to be there. Everybody showed up. So.
Yeah. And you were kind enough to send over some bottles to review and just taste. And because literally, I can talk till I'm blue in the face, but until I actually taste and smell and appreciate and discover what you're doing with some of your wines. For example, I mean, you have a series called Vision, the Vision series, yes.
Yeah.
What qualifies as the Vision series?
It kind of evolved as a way for me to experiment, so kind of pursue some of the things that I think are fun and interesting as a winemaker, but also with some new and young plantings that we did starting in 2008, it was a chance to kind of explore the terroir by adopting different techniques, and but also to kind of get a comfort level with the vines as they matured in that new location. So so that was primarily our Chardonnay and Pinot Noir that are now 10 years old, but you know, over the years I've done a few different things with them.
Were you also challenging yourself?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things about coming home to make wine at the family property, there weren't very many single vineyard wines made from my family vineyard before I started making it, so I didn't really have a reference point. But I also knew the terroir, you know, more from gut feel. And having, you know, I like to say having walked with my bare feet through the vineyard as a kid, I knew the soils that way as opposed to like an intellectual exercise. So, you know, saying, okay, how far can I take this or where, you know, what is the best expression of this variety that's, you know, been in the ground since the 1980s, but nobody's really explored. So
she's Ann Sperling, Sperling okay. Vineyards. One of the first wine terms I can ever remember, and I had no idea because I just heard it as a kid, was cassaba. I didn't know if it was a brand. I just remember adults talking about cassaba. And I noticed you have a planting there. Is it Pearl of Cassaba?
It is. Yep. The original plant material. It's a vinifera. It's from Hungary, and the original plant material came onto our farm in 1929. So we have like the same genetic material because over the years, as we needed to make replacement vines, we would use the existing vines to make cuttings and
sure.
then root those and plant them to fill in the holes. So it's been on our farm for, you know, almost ever. Like, I best describe it as it's literally like a garden variety. So if you had a you know, a backyard garden with a few fruit trees and some tomato plants and, you know, things like that, some flowers here and there, you could grow these vines. And because the grapes are delicious to eat, you know, flavorful, delicious, and has that muscat profile. So you could make a bit of wine for the family. You could eat the grapes and, you know, just enjoy your backyard in different ways.
So you sent me this bottle, the Pet Nat. Is it made from that Pearl of Cassaba?
It is.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So I've been making our Spritz, which is a Moscato d'Asti kind of inspired wine. And one of the things about this grape variety is that it ripens at very low Brix. It also ripens in August in Kelowna.
Hmm.
So it's, you know, over the years, my grandfather was always frustrated because no winery would take grapes in August because they were, you know, they weren't interested in making wine until. So he would often, you know, use it to make homemade wine or, you know, try and hang it on the vines. But half the time, the bees would come and shell out the berries because with muscat, they lose acidity very quickly once they're ripe. So, But one of the things in harvesting it in August, I've found that over the years, it just wants to ferment. As soon as you crush those grapes, it's ready to go. And so making a pet nat was kind of a natural kind of expression or something that I felt that the grapes would suit. So basically we crush and press. We do a little bit of cold settling just to get a little bit of some of the solids out, but not all of them. And then we just, manage the temperature and away it goes. And the fermentation as well as malolactic just take off. So when just before all of the sugars are consumed by the yeast, we go to bottle with it, and the fermentation finishes in bottle.
Yeah.
But just enough for an effervescent wine, not like full-on sparkling pressure.
She's Ann Sperling, Sperling okay. Vineyards. When you first tasted it, what did it remind you of?
Oh, well, it changes a lot once it's in the bottle. So when it's freshly fermented, maybe a bit like cider. But then over time, and now, at the stage that you're tasting it and going forward, there's going to be more of that muscat expression and more fruitiness coming through. So there's always, a few like melon and pear notes and then the muscat aromas to go with it. But, it ripens at quite a low Brix, usually around 16 or 17 Brix max. So the alcohol is only, less than 8.5. It's about 8.2%.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. 8%. Now, was that just because the process made it 8% or was it in the picking? What made it 8%?
Well, the grapes taste delicious at that stage. There's fresh acidity. There's, enough of the grapey, muscatty character,
yep.
And leaving the grapes to hang longer is usually a disaster. It doesn't, ripening it further or for sweeter grapes doesn't make a better product. So
there's no additions, nothing added. Is it? There's no fining. There's no filter.
Right.
There's some funky stuff. By the way, the entire package is funky. That's what I wrote down.
Yeah, well, it's we had some fun with it. We wanted the challenge was to make a wine without any additives, so that includes no sulfites, and to make something that was different. So same goes with the packaging, in a clear bottle, so you can see that there's a bit of sediment. That's not a lot, and I find that actually if you incorporate the sediment, you get a slightly fuller bodied wine. In your glass. If you, decant it, that's fine too. But we're really liking it with just a little, roll the bottle or a slight tip before you open it, so it's all suspended.
What have you paired it with? Have you had some cheese?
I find, for me, I like it to open it as a starter. So, whatever you're having while you're cooking or, when you're... when your friends arrive, if you're having some fresh cheese or, just any sort of nibbles, and, you could probably enjoy it with chips or popcorn too, right? It's just that easy and refreshing.
She's Ann Sperling, Sperling okay. Vineyards. Now tell me about the label, because my bottle only has a string wrapped around it now.
Most of the Vision series, as the name would imply, has a series of eyes on it. So it's a very captivating label. And I'm proud to say that the inspiration for the label came one day when I was flipping through my daughter's sketchbook and came across this page of eyes that she had done. So I actually, let her know that I was stealing her art and then worked with a designer to create the label. So it's captivating in a sense. But it's also, I think, it kind of draws you in and makes you ask, what's going on here?
Yep.
And, so it's fun that way, but it's also a way that, the next generation can be involved in my winemaking and what we're doing as a family.
I have a follow-up, and that is, and what caught Meg's attention, she said, does that say 8.3 alcohol for the Spritz Pet Nat? And she said, are we going to start to see... reduce alcohol on whites coming out of the Okanagan? What's the answer?
Well, you know what? It's all climate driven, and so it's not. You know, I didn't do anything to reduce the alcohol. That's just naturally where it works with that grape on our vineyard. And if you check the most of the labels, you're going to see that our alcohols are lower. So certainly in the Riesling, the Market White, the Market Red, they're all, everything's certainly below 13, but lots of them are below 11.
We are talking with Ann Sperling about the Spritz Pet Nat 2018 from her Vision Series at Sperling Vineyards in the Okanagan. And it is, when you see this bottle, you are going to go, you're going to stand there and go, what am I looking at? And I'm just here to tell you, and Ann is here to tell you, that don't be afraid of the look of this bottle. Enjoy what's inside the bottle. It's fantastic. 8.3%. No additives, no fining, no filter. Wild ferment with lees. Limited release.
As I recall, it was 265 and they're cases of 6. So not that many bottles.
Okay. Also part of this Vision Series and also very challenging, an organic natural amber Pinot Gris 2017. Nothing added or removed. And as you say, it's winemaker driven.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a very old style, right? So it's there's a monastery in the Georgian region, as in, you know, Eastern Europe, where they've been making orange wine from the same vineyard with the same equipment and the same methodology since 1010. So I didn't invent this or anything. But again, it was, okay, I've got these old vines, and I think that, you know, there's a lot of integrity in what we're growing. And so can I turn this into a wine that doesn't, that's not supported by additives?
Okay. She's Ann Sperling, Sperling okay. Vineyards. Just double check me on my notes here. Winemaker driven to explore the vineyard and the varietals and the varieties. It's what happens when you take 95 to 100% of the grape and ferment it as not an expression of a vessel, but the grape. And it is quite, you know, Pinot Gris is one of the kings of the Okanagan and of Canadian wine. We can grow Pinot Gris and we do, and there's always a different expression of it. But this is organic, natural amber. This is really something different.
Yeah. Well, when you make white wine, the first thing you do is press the grapes and throw 35% of what you've just been farming for the last, you know, 6 or 8 months. Into the compost pile. Yep. You know, that's the skins and stems. And so when I'm saying I'm taking like 95% of it, I'm putting everything or virtually everything into the fermenter. I use 40% whole clusters and then destem the other 60%, but it's skin, seeds, and juice that goes in into bins to ferment. So it's really exploring, you know, the whole grape as part of the expression. But, you know, this is kind of geeky talk, right? We're just talking about winemaking. Really, the wine is delicious. It's refreshing. We all think we know what Pinot Gris tastes like, right? Well, like you say, this is totally different. And it's savory. So what is fun about it is, like, you know, there's this whole side of sensory and food that is about, you know, herbal things and savoriness. And, you know, we have no problem having it on our dinner table, on our plates, but why don't we really explore it in our glasses? I mean, sure. We're starting to get a little bit of that or more of that with cocktails and things like that. But in wine, for some reason, we only talk about fruity. And, you know, occasionally we'll get into earthy and a few descriptors like that. But there is a whole element of savoriness that some grape varieties express better, where, you know, like Petit Verdot or Dolcetto or some, you know, varieties like that. But I wanted to bring that into Pinot Gris and see where it would take us. And it's easy to match with food. There's a lot more tannin and texture to the wine as well. And it's bone dry, so but you do get a lot of volume from the extra tannin that comes through from the stems as well as the skin. So it's not harsh, it's just most filling. So
and the clarity of it, translucent.
Yeah, I mean, it settles out in the bottle. It has a lot of pink color, pink hues to it. If you want to decant it, no problem. But if you want to incorporate the lees into your glass, then you get a more full-bodied expression.
There's going to be a new run on strainers in the wine business.
I don't know. Everybody's got a decanter that just collects dust on the shelf. I think that, people don't use them, but I think they should.
Okay.
I like what decanters do to wine.
Me
and
too.
Even if it's, 5 minutes before you serve it, you're still going to derive a benefit from it.
Sure. She's Ann Sperling, and we're talking about Sperling Vineyards, the Vision Series. I knew in talking to Ann that this would be a two-parter. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, Lieutenant Governor Award winners Vision Chardonnay. Hang on. We'll be right back. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13, the Wine Online National Wine Awards, number one winery in Canada. Summer hours are here. They're open now until Thanksgiving. The Castle is open daily, 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. You can find them on Facebook, Twitter, and at road13vineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth in the Cowichan Valley. Now that we have the restaurant open for business and the pizza oven is up and running, you'll find Unsworth pouring new releases at the Duncan Farmers Market every Saturday from 9 to 2. And the Cowichan Valley Wine Festival is taking place August 23rd through 25th. At Shawnigan Lake School. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com. She's Ann Sperling. We're talking about Sperling Vineyards in the Okanagan. And specifically, I'm kind of geeking out, Ann, on your Vision Series, because I just like the fact that nothing's added or removed, and it's honoring the past. And we come to the Vision Chardonnay, which won the silver at the Lieutenant Governor's Award 2018. You start with select barrels, right?
Right. Well, I'm starting with a single block of vines from our family vineyard, a planting that we established in 2008 at our highest altitude in the vineyard. So one thing about our location on the east side of Kelowna is that it's a very cool site. We don't get a lot of direct sunlight for much of the growing season. Chardonnay ripens much like under the conditions that you might have in Champagne or Chablis, maybe warm years Chablis, cool years Champagne. Obviously we don't get the same kind of humidity and moisture, but we do get a lot of cool nights, and particularly in the fall. So the ripening is slow and steady, but retains a lot of freshness, acidity, and minerality. So this is a traditional kind of Burgundian style. So whole sure. clusters are harvested and then pressed. And the juice goes to large format barrels. So what that means is like a typical barrel is about 225 liters, and I'm using 500-liter barrels.
Sure.
So the idea is less oak impact and, maybe a slightly warmer fermentation because it's a bigger vessel.
And a little bit of fresh oak, right?
Well, the barrels are all French oak, but not necessarily new barrels every
okay.
year.
Okay.
So when it's a pretty small batch, so a 500-liter barrel represents about 20 to 25% of the batch. So I'm trying to minimize the impact of new wood, and so I'm using wood that's air dried over a longer period of time, like 40 to 48 months. And then a toasting treatment that's very subtle. So the idea, it's more of the impact of the vessel and being in wood and the little bit of slow oxidation that you get rather than really kind of having it in as part of the flavor profile.
And also some batonnage, just stirring in those lees back into.
The lees. Yep. Just to, smooth out and increase a bit of texture and volume in the mid palate. So it's a wild yeast ferment, full malolactic, and then bottling before the next harvest.
We're talking to Ann Sperling at Sperling Vineyards, and these are the wines in her Vision series. We'll, next time we talk, we'll touch on the Heritage and the Market series, and we'll do it at the end of this show just to remind you that there's four or five different components to Sperling, and a lot more to Ann, because you know what? Frankly, she can't help herself. She is a wine geek. All right, now, I want to ask you about this Vision Pinot Noir 2014. And then there's a subtitle to it, Love and Labor Since 1925.
Yes, that's kind of when we were thinking about, you know, what the heck are we doing here in this family winery business and vineyard and all of that. And, you know, it kind of came together with that phrase. And really, you know, it's about loving the place that we're in, loving what we do, and, you know, loving and each other as a family. And so, you know, but a lot of that has come through, you know, through the work that we do. And, you know, having a vineyard and having a winery is a lot of continuous work, even sure. though it's different with the seasons. But, you know, I think it's part of our family motto is that if there's a problem, usually a bit more hard work can solve it.
Three clones in your Pinot Noir, 114, 777, and 828. Do you harvest them separately? At what point do you blend?
Okay, so with the Pinot Noir, you know, much of our vineyard is old vines, and so there's a real depth of character that comes from an old planting. And unfortunately, my dad never planted any Pinot Noir, and so as soon as I took the reins, that was something that we knew we had to do. And but I also knew that for many years I'd be working with young vines, and so into the planting, we had to build some elements of complexity. The 10 acres that we have is actually around a hillside, so it starts out with more of a southern aspect, and then it goes to west, and then to northwest. So the aspects are going to offer some complexity, and then the different clones are providing some complexity, and then harvest date comes into it as well. So generally, what I'm doing is as the more south-facing and west-facing blocks ripen earlier, and so I'm picking that to fill my 5-ton fermenter, mm-hmm. and then I'll keep working my way into the cooler zones as the fermenter becomes available again. So small winery, we do five tons, and then once it's fermented, then we do five more tons. So it might take, you know, a month to get through all of the Pinot Noir. And but by that point, we have, you know, a different ripening profile, but also each fermentation lot is, it's not, we don't stop and start with the clones. We'll start with one clone and work into the next one.
Sure.
So that it's co-fermented. So each lot is a little bit different.
She's Ann Sperling, Sperling okay. Vineyards, 18 to 24 months in large format French, new, used?
Yep, a mix of both. Again, I'm not building a wine to taste like oak, so the oak is there for the aging aspects. I'm using about 50% whole clusters in the ferment, so there's lots of tannin and structure because of the stems.
Yep.
And then another layer of complexity comes from the whole berry fermentation of half of the lot. So you get some fruitier expression, and then the savoriness from the stems, but also a floral element that comes through. So it's and then there's always that lovely, you know, strawberry, cherry, raspberry notes from the Pinot Noir itself from the classic kind of expression of Pinot Noir in a cool area. The reserve is a barrel selection. So that was a couple of, well, that was one puncheon that we selected that we particularly liked.
Price point.
Oh, you're asking me that?
I think it's $35. Does that make sense?
No, I don't know.
Okay. Okay. I have one more I just want to ask you about, and then we'll just review a couple of things. The Brut Rosé 2013. Pinot Noir, single block, and you choose a harvest specifically for a sparkling ripeness?
Yep. So harvesting at, with Pinot Noir, usually we're harvesting around 18 and a half to 19 bricks. Sometimes it edges up a little bit higher.
Do you remember how many cases?
So classic method, the rosé specifically was only about 1,200 bottles.
Okay. How hard do I have to run to find this stuff?
Yeah, well, the Brut Rosé is very limited.
Okay. She's Ann Sperling, Sperling okay. Vineyards. So that's the Vision Series, and you can find all the details on the website, sperlingvineyards.com. Mm-hmm. The Heritage Series, that one I understand, the Old Vines Riesling, the Old Vines Fauche Reserve. It's the Market Series that we just want to give a heads up to. The Market Red, the Market White. Are they field blends?
Well, actually, no. The Market wines are, like for the white, for example, they're both blends, and they're both from vines that exceed 30 years of age or more. But in the case of the white, for example, it's Bacchus and Pinot Blanc. And those ripen at very different times in our vineyard. The Bacchus is very early. The Pinot Blanc is generally the last thing we pick. So so those are fermented individually and then blended.
Is there the Market Red, Pinot Noir, Old Vines Fauche?
Yep. And I do an earlier pick on the Fauche. And do lots of whole clusters and just a bit of wood, but mostly it's meant to be like a very fruity, fresh, almost like a chillable red.
And the organic spritz is a sort of a second cousin to the Pet Nat.
It's the really pure, fresh expression primarily of Pearl, but also some Bacchus gets blended in there too.
And finally, the ice wine. Can we even talk about ice wine in the summer?
Well, you know what? You'll never be disappointed when you open a bottle of ice wine and have it with, you know, a nice aged cheddar or a creme brulee or something like that. And, you know, you can do that in the summer too.
Where's the surprise coming? Are you working on something that is under the radar and you're going to release this year?
From the 2018 vintage, I'm expecting, like we did the Pet Nat, so that was sort of fun, and I'm going to continue with that varietal, that trend for a little bit longer. I think the Pinot Noir is really exciting, and so I've got a couple of barrels that I'm going to do a reserve from because we haven't done that every year. Yeah, that's the thing that I'm most looking forward to is some more reserve Pinot.
Have yourself a great summer. And next time we talk, we'll talk about Niagara, okay?
Okay, sure. Sounds like fun.
She's Ann Sperling, Sperling okay. Vineyards. And check out the website, sperlingvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth in the Cowichan Valley. Now that we have the restaurant open for business and the pizza oven is up and running, you'll find Unsworth pouring new releases at the Duncan Farmers Market every Saturday from 9 to 2. And the Cowichan Valley Wine Festival is taking place August 23rd through 25 at Shawnigan Lake School. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com.